Hey everybody, it's Michelle Fisher and welcome into A View From My Window. Today we are talking about the Blueprint for Change. Now that the ARC has presented the report, we are now looking to the next phase, a plan that puts all the different steps together. ARC Executive Director John Dickerson is here to talk with us about it. Hi, John.
Hi, Michelle.
It's so nice to see you.
Well, it's great to be back.
You're a busy guy. We haven't seen each other for a while.
It's good to be here.
Well, this is something groundbreaking. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think it's really been an eye-opening thing for us in the ARC, because for years we've been working on ending the waiting list, getting more people on the Medicaid waiver, and Indiana's had great success. We are supporting more people now than ever before in our history. We don't have any public institutions, and we're giving more people choices. But the waiting list is so huge. And it really struck home one time when I was talking with his mother, and she had finally gotten the Medicaid waiver after waiting all these years, nearly a dozen years. And she said, you know, I feel like I wasted this time. What could I have been doing for my daughter when I was just waiting for these services to come? And it really hit home that we still want to support people. We want to get resources to them. We want to have these tremendous programs we have in the community. But there's a whole lot people could be doing beyond just waiting for services. So the blueprint lays out three things. One, cultural change, that we've got to change our thinking. Those of us in the disability community got to look at things differently. Secondly, the structural changes we have to make, that we've got to do things differently in the services and the money that we have to spend. And thirdly, we've got to reinvest and document where we spend every precious tax dollar to get the greatest reward for what we invest.
So maybe a parent who's looking and listening to this, though, is like, well, I've worked with Medicaid, you know, the waivers. That's what we're doing. I mean, I can't do anymore. You know.
Well, that's really true. And, you know, we're not saying we're going to put this all back on families and it's all your responsibility. In fact, one of our founding members kind of chided me up in Lake County not too long ago. And he said, well, it sounds like you're kicking everybody out and putting them back with mom and dad. That's not the case at all. The question here is, how do we make sure that with 20,000 people in services, which is great, and we just brought 45 more people into services last week, one of the few states that is still adding people into services, and we want to keep that going. But we need to make sure we're stretching the dollars as far as we can. And so the idea that we start thinking about offering people not just what is available, but what they really want. That's a structural change. That we allow people to spend what they need, but no more, is also a cultural change. That we ask people to say, if you don't need it, don't spend it, because Sarah over here might need it, and she's been waiting for all these years. Secondly, as we started looking at this, we started saying that there are things people can give back, and maybe there are some people that don't need all their money in their budget, so they can give something back, but somebody else may need more in their budget, and maybe that family can help another person on the waiver. You know, it's interesting, over half the people on the waiver don't have any active family. And if your mom really knows the waiver and knows how to work it, maybe she can go to a meeting and advocate for somebody that doesn't have anybody in their life. Maybe that's a way of giving back. Mm-hmm. The other thing for those families that are waiting, we're trying to connect them and say, what can you do while you're waiting? How can you start a job club to help your son or daughter find a job? And one of the great ideas that came out as a good way to learn a job is volunteering somewhere that might lead you into work instead of sitting at home waiting for that job to appear somewhere. So there's a lot in there, and there's a lot that we've got to organize and pull together yet before it'll be real.
Well, real it almost is, but let's talk about the workshops that were given at the Blueprint for Change. I was participating in one of them, and it was the Career Pathways workshop. And one of the things that they did was I told my story, and then we were asked questions. And a lot of people that I talked to, it's sad to me because they don't know what they want to do, even though they have this opportunity to really look at what they want to do. They don't know what to do. So what is your advice to parents who may not know what their son or daughter wants to do, or the person with the disability who doesn't know what they want to do?
Well, they're not alone. You know, we had a discussion in this room just among our staff the other day about our young adult children leaving high school and going to college, and the number of college students that don't know what their major is going to be. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people wondering what they should be doing right now. And as Betty Williams once said to me, we're asking people what kind of job they want when we don't even let them choose what kind of toothpaste to have in the morning. Yeah. So we've got a whole lot of work to do to help people explore a career pathway instead of just a job. Too often it's just let's just get a job at McDonald's or at the hotel or at a restaurant or at the grocery store. Instead of thinking about it as a career pathway, who do you want to work with? What are the kinds of hours you want to work? What are the people look like that you want to work with? Mm-hmm. Do you want to work with other people with disabilities, or do you want to be out integrated in the community? What is it that makes your life feel like you're leading somewhere as opposed to a destination? I think that's the key to a career pathway, that it's not just about a job, it's about where you want to go with your life. And that's a cultural change for our staff and everybody that works with people with disabilities.
And let's talk about those people who work with people with disabilities. They, you know, how do you tell parents, you know, really understand who your child is working with or who works with your child, because that can make or break them. Their influence can make or break them. What do you tell parents that say, this person's not working out for my child, but they need somebody because they need help, but they're not helping them maybe?
Well, I think there's two parts to that question that are really important. That if you're going to have somebody help you in some of the most important details in your life, you've got to have somebody you like, you want to work with, and that you respect, and who also respects you. And that doesn't always happen. I think there's changes going on within the provider world where more providers are letting the final hiring decision be the individual who happens to be the consumer of services. And their only criteria is, do you like this person? Mm-hmm. You know, my daughter just went to work for an agency doing respite work, and she had to be hired by the families and the individual she was going to be doing respite for. Mm-hmm. So she had to interview with them that they chose her. Mm-hmm. What a good idea that we give, especially adults with disabilities, the opportunity to choose who is it that's going to be helping them. Because if we had somebody that's helping you find a job that's really miserable in their life, hates what they're doing, how good of an experience is that going to mm-hmm. be?
Right.
Conversely, we have some amazing staff out there. I was at a meeting at Noble of Indiana, our local chapter in Indianapolis, and they were honoring through Project Search that they had 13 people that they had found jobs for that were all earning above minimum wage and working over 20 hours a week. One of the people the job coach placed was actually earning more per hour than she makes. And she wasn't resentful of that. She was proud that she got her a job.
And I remember we had a awards presentation, and there were two teachers that were high-quality people that really helped people with disabilities realize their potential. To me, that was awesome. I mean, you meet people like that as an executive director, don't you? I mean, to see this all come together, that there are people that are dedicated to people with disabilities, that's got to make your heart feel so good.
Well, there's so many people out there now working hard to change things. And that's one of the gratifying things about the blueprint. Once we put it out November 1st, and we're now just a month later, we're having people call in and say, how do I get involved? How do I help? How do I help think through some of these issues? Mm-hmm. And so what we've done is we've formed a steering committee that is beginning to take this very detailed plan and say, how do we prioritize it? Because we can't do everything right away.
Right.
So we're picking out the things that are most important for both the disability community to do, because this isn't just a project of the ARC. It's got to be broader than that. And then secondly, what are the things that we need to get the administration to do? And thirdly, the legislature. And so far, we found a very good reception from the administration. And in fact, they've said they've started thinking about some of these areas on their own, and it fits very nicely with some of their plans, as well as where we've wanted to go with the blueprint.
So you have somebody working with you instead of against you.
Yes, and I think that's always where we've achieved great success, is working with government to advance along these critical areas. And everybody gets it that we don't have enough money. Mm-hmm. We don't have another $1 billion in the bank that we can double the amount of services that we have. So we've got to figure out, what do we do? The other thing that's been really interesting, we had a Representative Wes Culver, who is a new legislator from up in the Elkhart area, on the DD Commission. Mm-hmm. And he said to me that one of the most important things he thought about the blueprint is that people were saying, we've got to figure out within the dollars we have how to do things better. And we weren't just whining and asking for more. And his response, I think, is indicative of where people are saying, if we can use the money better to get better results, get rid of some of the bureaucracy and the rules that make us do things that don't add value and just cost money, and do what people really need, everybody wins, including the individual with a disability, their family, and the taxpayer.
And that means involving then the person with a disability in the plan of their life.
Absolutely. Really. One of the key parts here is changing the whole dynamic. Right now, we often get professionals in a room and the consumer is there at the table, but everybody's huddled around calculators figuring out how we divvy up the money. And very rarely do we get back to talking about what this person really wants in their life. And we've got to return to that. As one mother said to me, it's like we quit talking about my son Bill and all we do is talk about dollar bills. And what he has is he wants a life. He wants a job. He wants to live near where he works. He happens to use a wheelchair. And he needs an accessible community. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't need hours of staff. He needs outcomes. So how do we change this structure that's driven a lot about units of service? I've never met too many people with disabilities that argue they want more units of services.
Right.
What they want is help getting to what their goals are and figuring out how to do that. And it's all about the person. Good example is the idea of housemates. You know,
yeah,
we have a
We've talked about that before.
It's a real opportunity to save money and give people a better life. But you just don't throw people together, because you put the wrong people together and it's terrible. And mm-hmm. life becomes very bad. Mm-hmm. And so whatever money you save, you're going to spend far more with problems that come up along the way. We still have about somewhere around 500 or 600 people that need housemates. And we've got to focus on that, because if we find the right ones, it becomes a very good situation.
And I think one of the things that you guys had talked about in the morning was, maybe Melody was up there on stage with you in the morning, and she had said, you had said that she was a good person to know the bus system.
Yes.
So looking at talents that people already possess and maybe making that into a job for them.
Absolutely. You know, if we were hiring me to teach you to ride the bus, it'd be a real problem. But Melody knows how to ride the bus. She knows how to ride the bus really well. Mm-hmm. So how are the other talents that we have? We have people that have mastered the idea of getting a job and living in the community, who would be much better job coaches for another person with a disability than perhaps somebody with a college degree. Mm-hmm. When we talk about these peer support networks, what can we do to hire people with disabilities as professionals in our field, not just as recipients of services, mm-hmm. but they've learned how to conquer the system. Mm-hmm. How do we translate that? You know, one of the great experiences that years ago, there was a very popular television series that featured a young man with Down syndrome. And he was all of a sudden this rock star in the disability field. And he still is.
Is it Life Goes On?
Life Goes On with Chris Burke. Mm-hmm. And he was paid as a regular actor, right, not as a person with a disability.
Right.
But all of a sudden, people gravitated to that, and they started saying, I could do something. Maybe not be in a television show, but I could do something. And I recently had the chance to meet Emily Pearl Kingsley, who was the first person that brought an individual, her son Jason, onto Sesame Street. And this was in 1983. And he was the first person that was a regular actor on a major television show.
Wow.
And he happened to have Down syndrome. Happened to be her son. And it's not that his life was perfect after that, but it became a way to show people what's possible. And part of what we need to do is to continue with the blueprint to show people what's possible, not what they can't do. There's plenty of folks telling them that.
Mm-hmm.
The blueprint starts
exactly.
Laying out, here's what you can do. Well, I think it really empowers both the organization and the disability community as a whole, because we've changed the whole dynamic. We don't have to be victims. We don't have to be sitting here saying, gee, the government isn't funding everything we need. We've got to say that we're now on the offensive. Let's redesign what we've got. Let's look at ourselves and say, we are not the victims here, but we are the participants in building a better Indiana. Some of that's going to take government support. Some of it's going to take structural change. Some of it's going to take change of ourselves in what we do. And I think it's opened a whole new door for us that we're just starting to figure out.
Well, John, I am so thrilled that this has worked out for you. I was thrilled and honored to be a part of it, and I wish you the best.
Well, your session was just got so many positive things for people talking about what you guys shared. And along with the one about realizing gifts, where somebody just spontaneously got up and started singing. And, you know, the idea that we started talking about what people can do as opposed to all the things that are going wrong with the world, I think starts with each one of us individually. And what an inspiration you are, Michelle. And thank you for everything you do.
Thank you, John.